Hello and welcome to another episode of Monday Mile, your walk and talk podcast, your source of moving motivation. Today, my guest is a really good friend of mine. So for the first time ever, I've actually done no research whatsoever. We formed a mutual bond over our love of riding boards and cycling bikes, and the fact we both did reside in London around the corner from each other. It is my good friend and former professional surfer, Laura Crane.
Hi guys. Hi Ames. I mean, it's just me and you today. I don't know who I'm saying hello to, but all of you listening, hi down there.
Where are we? Where have I dragged you to?
Well, we are in High Street, Kent. I thought we were meant to be meeting at South Kent, but that's just me, as always. Bit late, bit lost, but made it. High Street, Kent, Holland Park.
We are here. It is quite confusing though, South Kent, High Street, Kent. Yes. So I'll let you off for that.
Thanks, mate. You not many people would.
Pretty much.
Appreciate it.
On time. So you're back gracing us with your presence in the UK. You've recently moved to France.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I miss you, mate.
I miss you too. I see you going out on your bike now and your little lycras and think, oh, she needs me. I know she needs me because the winter's hard for Amy. You might not believe it, but she really struggled. She always needed me to lend my coat.
I've still got your coat, actually.
Have you? Oh,
well. Yeah, no, I must give that back.
That's fine.
A year and a half later.
That's all right.
Now, Laura, take us back to your former life as a professional surfer. Little Laura, what's it you call? Grommy.
Little Grom.
In surfing.
Yeah. It's funny that you say former life, because I think if you speak to any athlete that has like left their sport and like gone into like a new realm, it really does feel like a former life. Like it feels like, was this the same life? But yeah, it was, I mean, I grew up in North Devon and I started surfing when I was about 8 or 9 and I just fell in love with it straight away. Like you, I did literally every sport that girls weren't really meant to do back then and
back
loved them
the
all. Yeah.
Would you say and, you were a tomboy?
Yeah, mate, 100%. Couldn't get me in a dress. I would only wear wellies. Well, basically, I mean, look at us, we're still kind of living it. but yeah, no, so started surfing down there, got sponsored by Billabong when I was like 12, and then literally just started traveling from like literally, yeah, 12 till 21. I was on tour, just doing the QS, modeling for Billabong, and like other sponsors that I had, which was like a dream. Literally
that,
like a dream.
That is crazy. From the age of 12 being sponsored. Any kid now, or even teenager,
yeah.
You know, the dream of representing one of those brands. For me, it was Roxy. Mm-hmm. Still is Roxy. You, Billabong. Like, those are the brands that are the pioneers of board sports. What was it like getting that first contract with Billabong? Because that's got to be a real landmark moment.
You know how that feels. Like, for me, it was like either Roxy or Billabong. I was like, I don't know. But they are still the two biggest like brands that you could dream of getting sponsored by. And I remember Blue Crush, great film. I wanted to be Anne-Marie. Anyone who has watched Blue Crush will know that she is like just the sickest person ever. Anyway, she wins this pipeline contest and gets sponsored by Billabong. And that literally was what happened to me. I'd won the British Nationals when I was, 12. And I won the women's and the under 18s. And this guy from Billabong like came running down the beach and was like, we want to sponsor you.
No
like,
way!
Oh my God, it's happening. And it was crazy. It all just moved so quick after that. And I just started like going out to France and I kind of moved there part-time, like here and there. And my mum and dad were legends. They just kind of let me go and do whatever I needed to do and never wanted to kind of stop me. But it's not now until I've grown up that I realise that that's such a big thing for a parent to do, just to let you go, travel.
Be free, go,
exactly.
Live your dream.
Yeah.
No, it is crazy. And talk about the transition to now. You kind of had a wild ride.
So yeah.
I think we first met actually on a dance floor.
Mm.
Oh, it must have been 2014.
Yeah.
Both living in London. Surfer, snowboarder, you know, everything kind of aligned, as mm-hmm. in, I'd like to say, I guess, speak the same language. You
yeah,
get it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
get
yeah, it. Yeah, definitely.
And there's a real mutual respect there. But since then, you've been on the craziest journey. You embarked on a visit to the villa. The villa we speak of was the Love Island Villa. And how has that transition been from there to where you are now? Because I've kind of witnessed it.
Everything, every bump, every flow, every blow, like.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Honestly, it's been, as you know, a journey. And I think even like the Laura that I was when I first met you was so different to the Laura I am now. Like, I had to learn so much about who I was outside of surfing, because when everyone all of a sudden, you know how it is now when people ask you, well, what do you do? And you're like, well, I used to be a surfer and now I kind of do a bit of this and a bit of this and a bit. And it was really just like me trying to find my path. And I think I went in there still a little bit confused who Laura was, still was kind of struggling with my mental health. But I thought, you know what, I'm ready enough to go into this show to know that I can just be me, you know, and I can try and do kind of 15-year-old Laura and Amy proud, you know. It's okay to be strong, and it's okay to have bigger shoulders or like stronger quads or whatever it is. It's still beautiful, you know, and just finding that own kind of path for yourself. And then I came out of Love Island and I really, really just wanted to make sure that I stayed true to who that person was when I was 15, you know. And there was a lot of things that happened to me younger with sponsorships and modelling contracts and stuff like that that really confused what I was meant to look like physically and also like on paper, you know. So I think that was probably one of the biggest transitions for me after Love Island, was just making sure that I could stay really true to who that was and just not working with any fast fashion brands or anybody that really didn't believe in my journey. Like, I'm happy to work with brands that are willing to move forward with their kind of sustainability and work with me in the future, like to kind of improve that. But anybody who just doesn't care outrightly for it, like, I just want nothing to do with it. And I think that was a hard thing for maybe some of the followers that I had gained through Love Island to understand, because they saw me posting kind of like a bit more expensive like products.
Yeah.
But that was part of my kind of belief, and I lost a lot of followers from that. And everyone was like, oh, how does that feel? And I was like, well, it actually feels great, because it means that everyone who follows me now follows me for who Laura is, and they want to see kind of the content that I want to push and that I'm proud to push. So yeah, it was just clutching onto the straws of who Laura Crane really is deep down for 3 years. But now we're here and we're all good.
And now we're here. No, it's been wild, you know, watching that transition as a friend as well. And I mean, it's crazy, isn't it, when you get thrust into the limelight like that, like surfing, snowboarding, most sports, there's an Olympic cycle and there's big contests and a light is shone on your sport, but only for like a very intermittent period. So when you go on a show like that and you're thrust into the public eye, I can imagine that process of managing deep down who you really are is quite tricky, is it?
Yeah, I think you're so used to when you're just in your sport being told, okay, this is who you are. You can't be seen doing this. You can't be seen doing that. You train at this time. You've got comps these dates. To literally all of a sudden being like, well, do with what you want with this.
Yeah.
You know, it's a new career that you've never done before and you have absolutely no idea what you're doing. But you go and you decide what you want to be with that. And it's a lot of pressure for anyone. Maybe a little bit less me, because I was kind of used to having like people kind of watching what I was doing since such a young age. But I just think the people that come out of that show and have literally come from a very normal job and then go and just have this crazy like audience behind them just following everything, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how they dealt with that. Like, having people like waiting outside your house. I was really, really lucky that I think not many people really...
Only I knew where you
were. Yeah, only you wanted to know. Mate, where are you? Because I'm on my bike and I can't see you.
It's okay.
But
you literally moved behind me. The road behind for a period of time, which was literally the best thing ever.
You could hear me oiling my chain. You thought, I'll bring mine over, so you should do mine too, didn't you?
You could clean my bike.
Yeah.
Cool. Cheers, mate. Another thing that we both wanted to delve into a little bit, and I'm fascinated to hear this, and I'm sure some of our listeners will be as well, is presence. Because so much of now, there's a lot of online, it's very fast paced, especially our listeners that live in cities. How have you found the ability to remain present when there is such a demand for you to be online? You know, your audience is huge. They want. How do you manage to find that balance?
I mean, it's something that I've really struggled with, you know, as well. We always have those chats where we're like, I just can't do this anymore. But then the next day you love it again and you feel really inspired about it. So I really think it is just about listening to like how you feel. And if you're over it for that day and you don't feel like you want to do it that day, you kind of just have to really respect that. And I think I used to just push myself and just pummel myself into the ground until I was just absolutely exhausted. Where actually, if I maybe just took a half day rest and said, hey guys, like, gonna do that next week instead because I need a bit of time for me to spend with my people that I love and just kind of reground myself a little bit, maybe I wouldn't have hit those kind of rock bottoms so often. But everyone does it, everyone burns out. And I think it's being able to recognize it kind of before it happens and not losing love with what you're doing, you know, and always having a little bit of passion into what you're doing, whether it is like your office job or it is something you're really passionate about, trying to put a spin on it that makes everything enjoyable, you know. And I think it's so easy to focus on the negatives since we've just had like this crazy last 2 years, but life is opening back up again. I think my biggest thing was just taking time off my phone. You know, I'm pretty horrible to get hold of, but that's a thing for me. Like, when I am with people, I try to be very present and I'm not really on my phone, which is great if you're with me, but if you're trying to get hold of me, it's not awesome. But that's what keeps me happy, you know. That's what keeps me like straight in my head, knowing that when I'm with my homies, like, I'm with them and I'm spending quality like life like moments together, you know. Like when we're on the bike, we just go and we just chat for like long periods of time, like don't even look at our phones or anything. We're just chatting about absolute breeze half the time, but it's just chatting, isn't it? Just be open, like, with your friends and comfortable, and those are the things that really matter. Yeah, just not burning out.
And how would you recognize the signs of burning out? Obviously, screen time is something that affects all of us nowadays. I saw someone actually the other day, they posted they're trying to get their screen time down and they'd made progress and it was like 8 hours.
Yeah.
8 hours! Like, dude, that is another level, okay? Mine's definitely up there, but it's actually like horrifying. So do you have any like little hacks or tips and tricks to sort of recognise that pre-burnout and help reduce the screen time?
Yeah, definitely. I think for people like you and I, when it is kind of partly your job, it's almost easier to make that kind of, I'm going to not work from this time to this time. But when it is just like a kind of aimlessly scroll, it's so easy to not realise that you've been doing it for like 2 hours, sat on your bed.
2 hours, that's kind of scary.
I know.
It's really
scary. It's crazy. But I have friends that are like, yeah, I've just been sat on my bed for like a few hours just scrolling. I'm like, no, go outside. But then also, that some people really enjoy that. And I think the best way to kind of monitor it is just getting outside. Like, have you ever tried to walk and also scroll Instagram and try and like see the scenery around you?
Yeah.
You can't do it. So it's just, for me, it was walking. And that's why I got really into walking.
Tell us about your journey with walking, because I remember last summer, I'd still be in bed and you're like, morning mate, I've just done 6 miles. And I'm like just waking up ready to go for a cycle, and you've been up and seized the day. Tell us about your relationship with that, because I know you also like to sort of commute on foot, and you did a bit of that this morning.
I basically started getting therapy for my eating disorder, which has been a long time coming. I had my eating disorder since I was like 15, and I just kind of got to a stage with it where I was in control of certain aspects of it, but there was just other sides of it that were just so out of control. And like, I just had no kind of moment to even sit and breathe with it some days, and some days like it wasn't even a thought in my head. And I was like, right, I'm ready to get this fully under control now and speak to someone and just be raw and open and just get help and just ask, like, please somebody help me. And the first thing she said to me was like, you need to stop working out as often, which for someone like me and you, that's like our savior, and like if you're feeling a bit low, we've always used that to pick ourselves up. But I didn't really realize how reliant I was maybe on actually exercise to make me either feel good or to kind of actually punish myself. So I think walking was something that I find obviously very easy because I'm fit and I'm active, but it was more of a show of self-love rather than I'm going to slam myself in the gym today or I'm going to go and cycle 100 miles. It was I'm going to do this for me because I know I feel good after and I'm not really going to have to exude myself, and it means I can do it a bit more often, because I used to really struggle with like exhaustion and just like push myself too much and then not be able to do anything for a few days.
Adrenal fatigue.
Exactly.
Travel, work, exercise, bang, bang, bang. Those people, especially that work in the city, I'm sure can relate to that.
100%.
And you're literally dragging yourself out of bed. But walking is definitely a kinder way, I think, of nurturing your body.
Yeah, I just started those 6 a.m. ones. That was the ones for me, like waking up early and being like, I'm doing this for me today. That was like, that was the start of it. And then yeah, it just kind of carried on from there, really. And the relationship with food got better and exercise got better, and it all just came together. And here we are, happy and smiling.
Here we are, here we are. Tell us about how you use your commute sometimes to work, whether it's cycling or walking. Because I remember you said something to me once and it really rang true in my head, and you're like, yeah, I've got a really busy day, I've got no time to exercise, so you know what, I'm gonna cycle to East London, I'm gonna cycle to this appointment, and I'm gonna cycle here. Is that something you still do?
Yeah, definitely. Like, even today, okay, I only had to come probably what, like 2 miles from where my house is, but I looked, every day I do it, I still look on City Mapper, I see how far it is to get the tube, how far it is to get an Uber, how long it's going to take me to cycle, how long it's going to take me to walk. And it always takes at least another, I don't know, 30 minutes to get a taxi because traffic.
Yeah.
Always, well, I hate going on the tube just because I just don't ever really like it. And cycling and walking are my only two options left, so I don't really have much choice. But yeah, it's I just enjoy it. I love being outside, and even if it's raining, like, I've learnt to love that since living in London, which has been
I have to say
steady.
I don't think I've learned to love the
but
rain.
But when we're out in the rain and we're on our bikes, and we always say, oh, I'm happy we did that.
Yeah, no, always.
Even though we're soaking wet, we go and sit in the coffee shop.
There is nothing better when you go on a long ride or a run. I don't know about a walk. A walk in the rain wouldn't do it for me.
Yeah.
But a cycle, and then you get to the other end, or you get to where you're going, and then you've got that reward. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is the best feeling ever. And then you go home, and the simplicity of having, like, a bath and a cup of tea is, like, the one.
And also, you get back from your day of work, you've already done your workout. You can literally get home and just chill then. And I think, well, luckily for you and I, we're ex-athletes, so if you turn up sweaty to most of your meetings, no one really cares. But I think a lot more places are making that more, like, I've got friends that work in offices, offices, and they've all got showers there now, and they're actually putting on, like, yoga sessions and stuff, which is so cool to see. Like, I really used to believe that was, like, such a cult, you know, that whole, like, office world, and everyone just used to wake up and work and that was it. But now I'm, like, meeting more friends, obviously living in a city, that actually work that city life, and they're like, no, you just make time around it. And I'm like, yeah, that is what we do. You're right. We make time around things for, like, our health and our well-being now, which I don't think we used to do as much. So,
it's definitely a lot more present, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tell us about your routine now. You've recently moved to France. You're situated quite close to the mountains.
Yes.
What's a normal day in the life of Laura? And how do you find that motivation to keep moving, essentially? Because you are very active.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really think I'm that active. And then I meet somebody that, like, maybe isn't as active, and they're like, wow, you did all that in one day. And I'm like, yes, I did do that in one day. It's pretty crazy, actually. But, I mean, yeah, we've moved to the mountains. I've always been a very, like, active, outdoorsy person. I love it. It just makes me feel, like, free. And it's really weird, actually, because someone asked me, but aren't you going to miss the ocean? And I'd never really thought about it like this. But the mountains and the ocean feel so similar, like, just big, vast spaces that are just, like, constantly moving. And I think there's something that makes me feel so relaxed about being in those places, because it's, like, I'm so small and my worries are so just, like, inferior to, like, this big, huge, moving, like, beast, you know?
Yeah.
And I literally just spend all my time in the mountains when I'm in France. Lake swimming, cold water swimming, hiking with the dog, gym, some cycling. Need to get my bike out there, actually. But yeah, no, literally just enjoying time in nature and just making sure that is really my time, because when I come to London, I'm obviously busy working, doing all the things I also really enjoy, but it's just nice to have that balance of, like, work and just play and Laura time, just to kind of chill a little bit. But living near the mountains, now I'm going to get a snow trip with Amy Fuller.
Go on. I'm actually so excited for it to snow.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait.
So with regards to motivation, how do you find the motivation to move? Because some of the people listening to this podcast, they might be, like, walking with us now as they listen. But let's be honest, a large portion of the population and all of us, we have those days where we struggle with motivation to get up and seize the day. Do you have any little hacks or tips
definitely.
On how to approach that?
Yes, I really struggled with this because I used to have the most incredible motivation. But it was when I had my eating disorder really, really badly. And I realised that that relationship with motivation actually wasn't that healthy. And I could work out every day, three times a day, and it wouldn't really bother me.
Wow, that's a lot.
And I think once I really dissected that with my therapist and we spoke about why I work out, and then that's when the walking started, and it was more about I'm doing it for me rather than like to exude my body. And I think once I realised that I was enjoying working out so much more because I was doing it because I loved my body and it felt good for myself, that was it for me. It all like kind of clicked, and I was like, wait, but this is how I always should work out, not because I think I should do it because I haven't done it for 5 days or because I saw someone on Instagram doing it last night and telling me that they felt great after. It was really just waking up and being like, my body wants this today, my mind wants this today, I'm going to do this for me. That was it. That was literally it. That was where my motivation comes from. And hey, don't get me wrong, like there's some days where I woke up and I just want to stroke the dog on the sofa and just chill, but those are the days that you really have to like listen to your body. And it might be because, I don't know, for me it's usually like the days before my period. Listen to your body, because it will come back round, and don't beat yourself up for not doing it, because it just means the next day you'll be even less likely to want to do it. But an actual motivation for me that works 9 times out of 10 is just putting my gym kit on, which sounds so cliche, and I know everyone says it.
But you're like, yeah, baby, like, I want to squat.
Yeah. I'm like, these look good today. just putting my gym kit on first thing in the morning, and that usually will get me there. And hey, if it doesn't, it doesn't. But I'm sure I would have done some hoovering and done a little bit of exercise.
A little bit of dancing with the
hoover.
I love that. I feel like we should go a little bit off piece for a segment of this, because...
A little bit of backcountry, isn't it, mate?
Seeing as, I like going off piece, and I mean, the surf is... not much piece.
No, when you surf.
There's no straight lines. You've got to be flexible out there. Let's tell our listeners about our cycle, because one of my little hacks that I find is also arranging like an appointment, a meet with a friend.
Wait, just let's pause here. Amy is the best organizer of all of our friends. She's always like, we're gonna go wakeboarding. She's got all these group chats, and everyone's like, yes, this sounds amazing. And Amy's like the one there. Organizing, we get it.
The Pied Piper. But I like to organize a time to meet to exercise. Going with a friend, that whole experience for me, it makes me more excited. Yeah. It makes me want to work out. I want to see my friends. So I think having something in place where you're meeting someone. So we met on a Saturday, mm-hmm. and tell them about our rogue trip, because
why did we do it in this first place? Oh, it was Prudential London, wasn't it? So we decided we were going to do the route of Prudential London, which was up to Box Hill.
Yeah, out, down.
We had never been to Box Hill alone, which is very important part of the story, because mine and Amy's directional skills are horrendous.
Excuse me, do not put me in that bracket. I was following you.
Blind leading the blind, we call it. Anyway, so we decided we're gonna cycle up to Box Hill, which was beautiful, it was amazing. And we get to top, we're like, well, that was a bit easy really, wasn't it?
What is this, like, everyone talking about Box Hill? Like,
yeah, because I think
so
it's beautiful.
I know, but then it's so hard, and Box Hill's really steep. Literally, I was like, is this it?
Yeah! Amy got to the top, she was like, is this what everyone was talking about? Everyone at the top, like, really puffing. Yeah, Amy's is just like, well, I want to do something more.
I think in my head, I'd, like, forecasted it to be, like, a mountain climb, like as if we were in the Alps.
Literally, yeah.
And it was just a little hill.
Yeah, it was.
So we got to the top.
And then we decided to put a poll on Instagram where we should go next. So not really realising how far Brighton was from Box Hill, we said, shall we cycle to Brighton, yes or no? Obviously, everyone in the pouring down rain wanted to see me and Amy cycle to Brighton. So off we pop.
Off we pop.
From Surrey on our little bikes. Not that much battery charge on anyone's phone at this point, realising that it was only going to take us like an hour. We thought hour and 40,
It took like 4 hours.
Took us 4 hours just to get there. We went on the motorway, had to like turn back. There were some hilarious videos. We'll get those in here, because they're actually really funny.
You were prepared to ride. Was it on the M23?
Yeah, I was like, this is fine.
I was like, mate, that is illegal.
And you're do you know what?
No, we're good. I'm like, no, let's go back up the slipway. We off this motorway.
I just knew if I followed my Google Maps down that motorway, we probably would have got there quicker. And I was so fed up of just going down a road for a mile, coming back and not getting anywhere, that I thought, do you know what? We'll make it look like we've got motors on the back of these things. Watch this. But we did. We made it in the end to Brighton. It was my first time to Brighton, so it was two firsts in a day.
Yeah. No way. Go on.
And we went to the Ivy, had a lovely little glass of wine, and that was it, wasn't it, really?
And then took the train back.
Yeah, we took the train back. Yeah.
What a day. That, to me, is the ultimate day out of fitness. All of the food, good vibes, cycling with your mate. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it was sick.
So we need to cycle to France. We did plan that, but we've not yet done it.
The only way that we're ever going to have this to happen is if you guys challenge us to something, because we're like challenge each other, like, oh, we should maybe do this, and then we never do it because no one ever knows that we've had the conversation. So if you guys maybe challenge us to something, it'll happen.
Okay. You heard it here. It is on you guys. Set the challenge. Let's raise the bar.
Yeah, okay.
And let's get it done.
We need to get on that. I'm ready.
So we have to ask every guest on Monday Mile about their relationship with Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a fan of Mondays? Is it a landmark day in your calendar, or is it just like any other day to you?
A landmark day. Right, Mondays. They used to mean absolutely nothing to me from like leaving school till about 2 years ago. And then I really started to hate them. Because Sunday was always, do you know what? Like, I've got to be so honest, because Sunday was always my day. I was probably a little bit hungover back them days. Having my roast dinner, feeling a bit full on
roast.
The sofa. And then the Monday fear. And you're like, oh, tomorrow I'm going to be getting messages from my manager in the morning. Everything's going to start moving.
Big time, my manager.
No, but you know, that means Monday started, because 8 a.m. on a Monday, she's like, hi, mate, you all good? Just wondering if you... So, like, Mondays are really my days where I'm like, okay, like, I've got to get this. I'm a little bit more happy to see a Monday now, knowing that I haven't usually been like out on the weekends as much, because COVID really did me a solid there. But no, it's another way of like motivation. I kind of actually like it now, because I get all my stuff done on the Monday and try and then have not as many things to do like throughout the week. So it's always like a very action-packed day on Monday now. I feel like I always go to the gym on a Monday, which I never used to do.
Yeah.
And I always get like a reasonable amount of work done. So
seize the day.
Spun that one back around. Cheers, COVID. Woo.
And for those listening, do you have any little takeaways to help people stay present?
Help people stay present. Put your phone down. Just be in the moment, wherever it is, even if you're alone or you're around some of your best friends or you're around family. If you feel like you're maybe being in your phone a little bit too much, or even if you don't feel like you're being in your phone too much, you probably are. And it feels so nice to put it down. I did these retreats, my own retreats actually, which I wanted to do for a long time. And the biggest thing that everybody took from being down there on the retreat was that they were off their phone so much. And that for me was so awesome, because I didn't even think that would be a thing.
Yeah.
But for people to say that that's what they got out of it was so awesome, because I love that. Like, I love feeling like present when I'm with my mate, like I'm just chilling with my mate and giving you all my time. And that's really important. So just trying to have those very present moments, they like just will change your whole day around. I really believe that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I'm vibing with that. I like that. Every time you're with someone. And I think that's so important as well when you are with your family. Because what's crazy now is you've got like your mum and your dad, and they like go on Instagram, and it's like, yo, no, we off this, because we're together right now at the table.
Yeah.
So yeah, call it out if you're listening. Call your mates out. Call your family out.
Yeah.
Monday Mile listeners, that is a wrap. Thank you so much to my good friend Laura Crane for joining us on our walk and talk podcast. It's mad. We're in up over 20 episodes, so I want to say a massive thank you to each and every one of you for tuning in each week. Do remember that the audio drops at 2 a.m. for those working the night shift every Monday morning, and the visuals will be dropping on social at 9 a.m. So a massive thank you to you for joining us every week. Have an absolutely wicked week.